Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Day after day, The Diaristic Impulse is the exhibition currently on display at the University Art Museum at the State University of New York University at Albany. The show explores the obsessive desire to record day-to-day activities, document private worlds, or chart the passage of time. Corinna Ribbs-Shamming is the associate director and curator at the University Art Museum, and she took me on a tour of the show last week and told me about some of the work on display.
Corinna, thank you so much for taking the time to take me around the exhibition today. I'm really excited to get a look at it.
Well, welcome, Sarah. It's great to have you here. The title of the exhibition that we're going to look at is Day After Day, The Diaristic Impulse, and it features 10 contemporary artists who are determined, I think, to make every day count. That's sort of the backdrop of the work. And the impulse to document and contain memory in written form in a diary is really the same impulse behind much of the work in this exhibition. These artists give visual form to that idea, and they do it through a sustained and cumulative effort. So they're doing this thing almost every single day or every day, and the meaning of the work kind of builds in the mere fact that they are continuing to do it in that ongoing project way.
Where did the idea for the show come from, and how did you find the artists to participate?
The idea came from just looking at a lot of artists that seemed to be working in this manner, and it just grew from there. Actually, I was going to start here with the work by Martin Willner, who was one of the first artists that got me thinking about the diaristic impulse. And we're standing in front of a series of his drawings from his ongoing project called Making History. And what he has done in this project is every day he draws a picture from the newspaper. There are 12 drawings here. And they're from the year 2009, so 12 drawings, one for each month. And in each month, he takes a 2-inch by 2-inch square, and he draws something that intrigues him that he sees in the newspaper that day. So for example, in this drawing that we're looking at, I have to say just so people have a sense of what they look like, they're black and white, and I think that stylistically they're a little bit akin to Art Spiegelman's graphic novels, if that's kind of a cue in.
Yeah, perfect.
And if we're looking at this one where he's taken portrait heads or from the newspaper, and if you look really closely each day, he's kind of taken one or two heads. In one example, we see Barack Obama, and then we see Michelle Obama next to him. There's a Tiger Woods half portrait. There's a swimsuit model here somewhere. There's a portrait of the artist, and on the other side of that portrait, in that 2-inch square, we see Woody Allen's portrait. And what Willner has done is he makes these kind of like umbilical cords or tubes that sort of connect everything together. So all these days become, in his mind, interconnected. And if you look closely, you know, these cords are coming out of noses and ears. But it's all part of what he calls this kind of surrealist stew that he remixes daily. And what's really cool about these drawings, too, is that they move back and forth, because on the opposite side of the drawing, Willner has written something that has to do with the square. It's kind of stream of consciousness. It's really, really hard to read, but we do provide magnifying glasses if people want to.
Yeah, it's a small, tight handwriting.
The other thing that I think is interesting to mention about Willner is that he is a practicing psychiatrist. And he's also the son of Nazi Holocaust survivors. And he speaks about that experience in that, you know, from a very, very early age, it was ingrained in him that it was important to make every day count. And so this kind of sustained practice of, you know, not only being a psychiatrist, having the responsibility of that as a job, but also as an artist to find a way to make meaning every day and make a drawing every day is what moves this project.
And he does do it every day. He doesn't skip a day and then make it up the next day.
Absolutely. I mean, that becomes part of the parameter that he sets and all these artists set. I have to trust when they say that they really do it when they say they do it. And so I'd have to say yes.
Well, trust me, if I were to take on something like this, I would make up the whole week on Saturday, and that would be terrible, because that's not the point.
That's true. But again, I think that's like part of what kind of the compulsion that drives these artists.
What are we going to look at next?
We're going to come over to probably one of the most humorous pieces in the exhibition, and it is a 15-minute video called Stealing Beauty by the artist Guy Benier. And the video is set up in a kind of narrative form. And what it is the artist has, for over 2 years, had filmed his family performing their daily routine in IKEA stores around the world without the store's permission. So, you know, it starts out with the artist, you know, kind of opening onto like a showroom, saying to his wife, honey, we're home. And they're going through, you know, washing dishes, eating breakfast. And as you watch the video, you notice that people are walking by in front of the camera. You'll see price tags dangling off of the furniture. And they literally, and they're, the way that the video is set up, it jump cuts. So, you know, you'll see them in the living room. And then a few minutes later, it'll be a totally different living room, a totally different kitchen. And it really starts with, like, the morning. We see the artist coming out of the shower with a striped bathrobe, and his wife is in her pajamas. And you have to realize that they're doing this, yeah. You know, again, without permission. And the artist has taken, you know, the video and filmed it and then added audio afterwards. So when you see his son drop something, he's washing dishes, and then you hear the dish crack, although there's nothing there. So it's a comic send-up of daily routines, but the kind of subtext that goes on as you're watching the video and you're listening to the kind of narrative unfold is you hear the artist lecturing his son about the importance of working hard and the importance of owning private property, and you know, you realize that this irony behind, you know, what's happening with the family and what in reality, you know, he's saying do not connect. So it's a send-up, I think, you know, about you know, ideas about family life, relationships, about daily routines, but that those daily routines are also addressing larger issues like productivity and consumption and ultimately the boundaries between private and public life.
Honey, I'm home. Honey?
Where are we now?
We are standing in front of a 12-foot archival case, and inside the case is a portion of a scroll by the artist David Shapiro. And the scroll comes from a year-long project that he did called Money is No Object. And for every month of the year, we see a kind of pattern developing with these artists.
The diaristic impulse.
That's correct. Every month, he saved every single one of his bills and any type of paper ephemera, and he then recaptured them, redrew them onto this vellum scroll. And so we're standing in front of the month of February. We have two of David's scrolls on view, February and September. And as you look at this, you look at it and you think at first it just looks like bills. You have a FedEx bill from US to Belgium, you have further down a Roto-Rooter bill, you have a canceled check, you have a credit card statement, mm-hmm. And as you look really closely, you can actually see the artist's hand in the thing, and you realize he has retraced absolutely everything, right down to the corporate logo or the indicia. And, you know, in a way, the same way that Guy Benier's kind of breaking down the public-private life and in the way that he lives, in some ways, Shapiro's doing the same thing, where he's revealing these private details of his life through these receipts, and it becomes autobiographical in that way. You really get to know a little bit about, or maybe more than you would like to know, about David, in the sense that You know that he has a very modest art supply bill. You know, at one point you know exactly on what day he bought at the local supermarket some Kalmata olives and cottage cheese. You know where he got a parking violation in that month. You know what he spent his money on. And so, you know, through that process, you can look at this and say, well, that's slightly crazy or self-flagellating to want to record that in such compulsive detail. Or you can see it as this kind of elegant gesture of bearing witness or saying, well, I'm here, that this too surrounds my life, and it is important, and this is the stuff that shapes our existence. And you know, as you're looking at it and as you spend time with it, you realize, you know, all of this kind of forgotten or overlooked type of information becomes relevant, and that the same information that you kind of find and parse out in David's life, it's the same contours, the same things that surround our life as well. And I think that's one of the things that happens with a lot of work in the show.
Yeah, it's so detail oriented and very interesting to come and like look through each of these for a while and say, oh, okay, that's what that guy buys. What's next?
Just down from David's work, we have the work of the artist Laurel Nakadate. And Laurel Nakadate is actually a performance and video artist. And we're looking at three very large-scale color photographs by Nakadate, and they're from this series that she did called 365 Days, A Catalog of Tears. And the parameters that she set up for herself was that she was going to cry every day for 365 days and photograph herself. So in the three photographs that we have on view, you know, at first you look at it and they look like they might be portraits or self-portraits. We see her looking out of a plane window with another plane passing by. We see her looking over a Oceanside parking lot. And then in the far corner, she seems to be crouched in maybe a shower stall or somewhere in the bathroom. And as you look closer, you realize that there's a tear coming down her in each one of these photographs. And she set this project up and actually sometimes took upwards of 80 photographs a day to kind of get the shot that she wanted, but also, you know, this idea of welling up a kind of emotion that's much harder than smiling. And I think that was one of the impulses for her. She was trying to find a way to counteract what she was starting to get. And this was something that she, you know, has expressed in her own words, this kind of superficial happiness that she saw in the world around her, particularly in social media and those all-too-familiar status updates on Facebook where everybody's smiling and everybody's happy. And so this becomes a kind of diary of loneliness and grief. It's the flip side of that. And, you know, she talks about, you know, by September or October, she's committed to doing this. She is doing it every day. But by September, October, it was like just so hard to keep going. But then by that point, she realized she couldn't not continue this process, right, that she had set up for herself. And in the end, she said that, you know, it really connected her to a part of herself that she wouldn't have known unless she had gone through this process. So it was kind of a way for her to see a side that she would never have gotten to without this kind of continued and sustained project.
I couldn't do it. I don't think I could make myself cry one day. I don't know if I'm not a good enough performer or something.
No, she did it everywhere. She did it in her childhood bedroom in Iowa, often in her apartment in New York City, as far away as Estonia, and actually in a hotel room in Saratoga Springs. You know, wherever she found herself, she would just take that portion of the day and make her do this thing.
What's next?
The next thing that we're going to look at is a very large print that comes in three sections. The entire print is 84 feet long in its entirety, and it's by the artist Rikrit Tiruvannit. And it's a bit of an anomaly for Tiruvannit to do a paper-based project, because he is an artist best known for what he calls his social sculptures or social practice. He is someone that's really interested in fusing the divide between art and life. So he has done things like all over the world in galleries and museums, set up a kitchen where he cooks for visitors that come into the museum or gallery space. In another instance, he helped people set up a radio broadcast out of a museum. He set up a rehearsal space for bands to come during the time that he had his slot to have an exhibition. So these are all the kinds of projects that he does. So this particular project, which is called The Map of Land and Feelings, chronicles from 1988 to 2008 everywhere in the world that he went to do these projects. Wow. He's extremely well traveled and well recognized around the world and has been called upon to do these kinds of projects. And as you look closely, you realize that the one thing that connects all of these three panels is that his passport runs through the center of each one. And it's a kind of layered way of him chronicling his career and his daily life, something that's very important to him. So there are a lot of directional arrows, there are maps, receipts, there are cooking recipes that he's used in some of his performances. There are maps from archaeological digs. There are also newspaper headlines. You know, in 1995, he was in Johannesburg, and there's a headline that says Stones Land in Four Jumbos. And you know that he was there at the same time that the Rolling Stones were there doing one of their major world tours. So it just kind of takes you through a life, making connections in a very layered way. Almost, I see it as a timeline. Yeah. Reads as a timeline. And in the same way that he's trying to, you know, have this kind of exchange with people, this sort of becomes a way of showing how he kind of moved through the world over the last 20 years plus.
That is fascinating and also makes me a little bit jealous of all the places he's gone.
This is true. Johannesburg, this is a few, you know, as I was looking at it, Reykjavik, China, Berlin, Vienna. I mean, incredibly well-traveled. It's interesting, too, because he was the son of a diplomat, so I think that, you know, that became part of his early experience. So his passport, you know, from an early age, I think, was a little bit more than most people's in terms of where it had been stamped.
We have time to talk about one more piece.
We're standing in front of an installation of paintings by the artist Byron Kim. And this is part of an ongoing project by Kim that he began in 2001. The title of the project is Sunday Paintings. And since 2001, every Sunday, no matter where the artist is, he paints a swatch of the sky. And as you look at the piece, each one of the paintings is exactly the same size every week, 14 by 14 inches square. It almost looks like, you know, these minimalist squares in a kind of serial progression. We have them evenly spaced out, and you see different shades of blue and gray. So these are, you know, observational studies in a sense, but he also, to kind of take them out of just being part of nature, he also makes a diaristic entry in his own handwriting over every single painting. He writes down the time of day he painted the painting and where he was, and some kind of notation that connects him to that place. Often it's very mundane. You know, there are several that you see him ruminating about not having enough time to be in the studio, and another he's filling out his daughter's college application, and another you see what movies he's seen and what television show he's seen. So we have, you know, on one wall, most of the paintings are from November and October 2012, and they also have a kind of historical place marker as well, in that in one, I believe it's 11-8-2012, he's talking about the sky being gray, that another storm is coming, that Obama has been reelected that week. And you realize, you know, you're looking at a grayish square, and you realize that this is, you know, on the heels of yet the other storm that came after Hurricane Sandy. And then 2 days later, you're looking at a bright blue sky, and he writes, "It's a gorgeous day." So it takes on this kind of cinematic, you know, experience and shifting experience from day to day. And the one thing that that I like about this particular installation, encouraging people to, you know, maybe come back a couple of times to see the show, is that Byron Kim has agreed to send us his Sunday paintings for the duration of the exhibition. So, you know, we started out with 14 paintings. By the end of the show, we will have 21. And he is sending us a painting every Sunday, Monday. Well, they come Monday or Tuesday, sometimes Wednesday, via FedEx. And so we'll be continuing to install those during the run of the show.
That's so great. That's really creative and cool. It's a fun thing to do. Corinna Ribb-Shamming is the Associate Director and Curator at the University Art Museum. Day After Day, The Diaristic Impulse is on display at the University Art Museum at SUNY Albany through April 6. For museum hours and to generally learn more, visit albany.edu/museum. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.